Welcome to the podcast series from the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration 2023, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You're listening to the lecture on regularization and other ways to protect undocumented migrants or migrants in irregular situations by Michelle Lavoie, director of the Platform for International Cooperation on Undocumented Migrants, PICUM, in Belgium. Michelle has led the organization for nearly two decades and advocated for undocumented migrants' human rights toward European and global institutions. Michelle has played a key role as a board member for several civil society organizations at the global and EU levels. Enjoy the lecture.
So, hello everyone. Thank you so much for the introduction. And thank you for your patience, because I have the last slot of the day, and I can imagine that everyone is probably trying to regain their energy. Hopefully, the presentation itself isn't as long, so that we can have some moments for exchange afterwards. So basically, what I'd like to do in this presentation is talk a little bit about undocumented migrants, or people who have irregular migration status. What are some of the challenges that are faced, and also what are some of the solutions that governments are looking at, including regularization policies, so trying to achieve regular migration status. If we look, this is just a brief explanation of what was already presented about PICUM. So we are in a network of organizations that work directly with undocumented migrants. One of our members is based here in Slovakia, the Human Rights League, and we have around 160 members. Our organizations are mainly based in Europe, but we also have some kind of along the borders of Europe. So in Morocco, actually some members in Israel as well. But basically, organizations that work directly with people who are at the risk of losing their status or who are already undocumented. So what do we understand by undocumented? Here, it's basically, and I don't know if Sonia's here, but we were talking earlier about how do you translate undocumented into Slovak? So maybe we can hear that afterwards. But I think her translation is pretty similar to this in terms of you don't have the official permission to live regularly in the country that you live, that you reside in. And in terms of being undocumented, we've actually found that the majority of people come into Europe regularly, so they become undocumented afterwards. And this first bullet point kind of speaks to that. Some people alternate between status. They might have regular status, then they lose it, they become undocumented, then they regularize again. We also see that the way of acquiring status depends on the laws at the national level for human rights standards and national priorities. So in terms of what we understand as irregular migration status and what kind of an impact that has on people's lives, we see it in a number of different ways. One is in terms of work and employment and the conditions, basically. So first of all, having limited access to the formal labor market. So it's not limited access to the labor market, because our realization is that when you're undocumented, you in a sense have to work in order to survive. There are people who are undocumented who depend on others and who may receive some assistance from others, but overall undocumented migrants are undocumented workers. And so they are working mainly in the informal labor market with very poor conditions. Also poor living conditions. And in terms of our experience as well is that the majority do live at the poverty level or below it. This obviously has an impact on people's physical and mental health. And their situation can be exploited by people who choose to abuse them. So, for example, an intimate partner, so a spouse or a fiancé, for example, using the individual's irregular migration status as a way to exert power over them, to make sure that they maintain their inferiority. The employer who is exploiting their workers, the landlord or landlady who wants to rent out a place with very poor conditions and uses the irregular migration status as a way to kind of threaten the person with eviction. And also irregular migration status does unfortunately mean a lack of confidence in public institutions, for example, health services, the justice system, for example, the police, education, because they fear that even if they have the right, and this is also obviously very interesting, I'll touch upon it later, to healthcare access or to send their children to school, that simply by going and presenting themselves, they could be reported to the immigration authorities. And we see that there's also a direct kind of link to how irregular migration or how migration is developed at the EU level and what impact this has on people's lives when they're undocumented. So it was actually in the year 1999 that the EU first developed its common EU migration and asylum process or law in a sense. It was the Tampere Council conclusions. And it's always interesting to look at that document because it's probably maybe 3 or 4 pages long. It's not very long. But you can see that fighting irregular migration, or at the time they were calling it combating illegal migration, was a key priority. But it's also been interesting to see how over the years that has been adapted, including the terminology. So it's been, in recent years, a very highly politicized issue, migration itself, and then preventing irregular migration is even more so within the migration policy at the EU level. The main focus is really deterrence. So, for example, the European Commission issued the Migration Pact, or the Migration and Asylum Pact, in September 2020. This has several legislative proposals and several policy areas. The whole combination indeed would increase detention at the borders, criminalizes people who offer solidarity to migrants. It focuses heavily on return. At the same time, the EU has an integration strategy, and this particular one was issued 2 months after the pact. What was good in the sense is that previously the EU's own integration strategy said that it was for people who are legally residing, so third country nationals who are legally residing. What was promising with the one from 2 years ago or 3 years ago is that they keep it open. So they no longer say we want to integrate only those who are legally residing. They don't refer to undocumented, but they also don't say legally residing. So that is promising. We've seen at the national level that there are many different types of developments concerning irregular migration. This kind of theme of border controls, detention, deportation, we've seen throughout the EU. This is just an example from the Border Violence Monitoring Network. They do continuous reports. I personally find it very difficult to read some of even just these descriptions. When you think about police unleashing dogs to bite children as a way of trying to control migration, this, in a sense, is an impact of the EU's migration policy at the borders, but that's just an example. We also see another way of trying to fight irregular migration or prevent irregular migration is to make service providers report them. So, for example, this was an official policy in the United Kingdom. It was called an hostile environment policy. It was actually called that. And it started in 2010 to make health providers especially report undocumented migrants to immigration authorities. Germany has had a law for years already requiring reporting. There was a new proposal when the new government came into force, I think it was a year ago, to drop that requirement. So that's very promising, but we have to see how that's going. Unfortunately, Sweden has a new government and a new coalition agreement from last November. Sweden's going in the same way as Germany and the UK, where there's now discussions to require reporting. And what's, I suppose, helpful and hopeful is that there's a huge resistance so far. So the resistance is from schools, health providers, well, actually all the people targeted, they're now kind of organizing to resist that. So we see in general that a lot of this is also the framing. So what was interesting with the, I don't know if you've talked about that at all yesterday or today, the Global Compact on Migration, this is from 2018, So we now have this global framework, and we had discussions over about almost 2 years leading up to it. And in the discussions, there was a question, should this global compact on migration also be for undocumented migrants? Should we recognize that they have human rights? And what's interesting in the Global Compact is that it does recognize them. It kind of solidifies what the international human rights bodies have been saying already for two decades, but now we have it in the Global Compact. So you did have that tension and that in the discussions. At the EU level, we see this framing with the whole discussions on the pact on migration. So the question, if someone arrives at the borders in the EU Commission proposals, the suggestion was that if they do not qualify for asylum, they should be deported immediately. So kind of this asylum versus deportation dichotomy, but it's much more complex than that. There are many other ways that people could have protection than just asylum. And we've seen this also at the national level, what this framing means. Thankfully, with the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw a lot of EU member states at the national and the local levels give COVID-19 vaccines to undocumented migrants. This was very hopeful. But we haven't seen any impact since then. So the question would be, you know, all these advances that we saw in 2021, maybe 2022, could they be continued? We haven't seen that. And also on children, we have a global consensus now to never detain children for migration reasons. The human rights bodies and the child rights bodies have confirmed that, but it's widespread. So we see also this continues with different ministries. You might see that in the countries that you're based in, where the issue of undocumented migrants is mainly in the Ministry of Interior, whereas we know that there are many other areas that impact their lives, health policies, social policies, education policies, but there seem to be working in silos. So here I just wanted to highlight some more promising things. I mentioned this Global Compact on Migration. What's interesting is that last year there was the first International Migration Review Forum. It's called the IMRF. Countries came back together after adopting this in 2018. They signed an agreement about their commitment, their progress so far. We're going to have reviews in 2 years, or next year, sorry. So we have some kind of a framework on the global level. It's a soft law policy, but it's still a very good framework to be looking at a lot of these issues. There are a couple of legislative frameworks now at the EU level that then are transposed at the national level that, in a sense, offer some hope for undocumented people who have experienced crime. One of them is the Victims of Crime Directive, already from 2012, which basically is interesting for us working with undocumented migrants because Article 1 says that it explicitly applies regardless of residence status. So this was a huge opening in 2012 because that meant, in a sense, that undocumented could be covered by it. And it was reaffirmed in 2020 by the Victims of Crime Strategy at the EU level, which also mentions undocumented migrants, that they are particularly vulnerable because they have a regular migration status, and that EU member states should exchange good practices on how to protect them. So those two pieces are ongoing. The EU is also revising potentially its own Victims of Crime Directive, potentially next year. But the other one to be looking at is another one called the proposed directive from last year on violence against women. And what's interesting in this one is that they're in the European Commission proposal, they foresaw a partial firewall. So basically, when the woman who has experienced crime would go for the first assessment, basically to the police or to the support authorities, there would be no personal data transfer between the police and the immigration authorities. The European Parliament actually proposed a much longer period, not just the first assessment, but longer than that. But this whole file is being negotiated now, so I think we'll have to see what comes out of it. And another example of a good practice is in the area of health. So Sweden changed its healthcare law in 2013. there was a huge campaign that lasted 10 to 15 years. Almost 70 organizations from all across civil society, trade unions, etc. There was the UN Special Rapporteur on Health, who did an official visit to Sweden. There was a parliamentary inquiry. So it was a huge, huge effort, but it did result in a law change. And that actually was the model for Denmark to do the same. And they changed their law last year in November and December. But as I mentioned earlier, the current government is looking at introducing an article to denounce. So even though the law is there, they're still thinking about making a policy to, in a sense, worsen it. And here, this is just to show that cities are actually some of the key actors working on this issue. The CMIs, the City Initiative of Migrants with Irregular Status in Europe, is based out of Oxford and in groups about 50 cities who come together and who exchange, and there's guidance as well. Here are some examples from Frankfurt, Geneva, and Ghent on these cities. And here I wanted to say the last part on labor migration and regularization. So this obviously is a key area. When we talk about people who are undocumented, we have to talk about access to services, to justice, but we also have to talk about how are they becoming undocumented, how to regulate that better. So that's regular pathways, and a lot of that is through labor, but then also regularization. So these are some examples of some reports that we've done to look at the framework for employment law that applies to undocumented, but then also what regular policies on labor migration should entail if we look at, for example, the ILO, the International Labor Organization frameworks. So that was on regular pathways for labor migration. And this part here now, just quickly towards the end, is on regularization. So here we wanted to highlight this report that we did earlier this year, where we looked at regularization programs and policies in nearly 20 countries, and around 80 measures. And basically, I mean, you have in this report in the beginning examples of these policies, kind of the argumentation behind them. But what I really wanted to highlight is how to do them. So it's not necessarily making the case for them, but when they are done, what would be some elements to make sure that they're sound, that they're sustainable, that they're actually effective? And these are the 10 elements. So basically, one, that undocumented should be able to apply themselves, that they don't require another person to actually do that for them. Two, that civil society organizations are involved throughout, the rationale being civil society, in a sense, are the closest to migrants, so they should be part of this whole process. Three, that the criteria to regularize are objective, that they're realistic, that they're not too difficult for undocumented to qualify for. Four, that it's very clear why someone would be refused, so that they can properly appeal it. Five, that the decisions are independent, they're impartial, that various experts might be asked to weigh in why. Six, that it's accessible, so not too expensive, not too difficult or bureaucratic, realistic timeframes, and that procedures that are digital are not also a barrier for people who can't have access to them. Seven, that we have other safeguards during the process. So, for example, free legal aid, the fact that if people who are applying need access to services or, you know, whatever else during the process, that they are not being reported to immigration authorities while they're applying. Ideally, in eight, they could have a temporary permit for this whole process. Nine, that if they get the regularization, that it's secure and long-term. We have examples in some countries in Europe where the permit itself is short, and then the renewal takes another year, and so they become undocumented very quickly again. So this is a recommendation for a secure and long-term permit. And then 10, that it's preventing further irregular migration. So that there would be other services and things that they could benefit from to help them. So I wanted to end here just on some general points on ways that we think we can all kind of be part of shaping and influencing better policies that impact undocumented. So one is to make sure that in the places where there are entitlements, so where the legal entitlements exist, for example, to healthcare, that people can safely access them, that their personal data are not transmitted sort of by having firewalls. Number two is that we recall commitments that most governments have made on human rights, that they extend to people with irregular migration status, and the reasons why they are done. So social cohesion reasons. For healthcare, professionals often talk about their duty to have the highest professional standards for people they treat. That's kind of the medical ethics reason. In healthcare, it's much cheaper to provide preventative care than emergency, etc. Third, this is kind of reinforcing the role played by cities, so try to find solutions locally as well. Fourth, try to rehumanize and reframe the migration debate. Fifth, kind of coming after the fourth, is to not use the word illegal. So to really refrain from saying illegal migration, illegal entry, illegal migrant, illegal work, illegal child. We've heard it all. We continue to hear it all. And so we actually have a recommendation for the translations of irregular or undocumented. Our translation in Slovak seems to be a little old, so we're going to probably adjust it, but we have it on our website. So we have it in all the UN languages, actually. EU languages as well. The sixth one is to kind of engage with other actors, maybe to kind of break out of our own silos. And number seven, to look at evidence and humane approaches. So I wanted to thank you for that. I didn't want to take too much time because I want to leave it open so that we can maybe have some questions, some reflections, comments, etc.
This lecture was part of the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.